The debate over UMaine is the struggle to cut costs hurting the system. The UMaine system faces a $36 million budget problem. Some of the proposals put forth by campus presidents to close the gap have stirred heated debate, particularly at the University of Southern Maine, which is trying to find savings of more than $13 million. The debate has raised larger questions about the overall mission of the public university system, about its need to spend its taxpayer dollars wisely while at the same time fulfill its obligation to educate students and develop and nurture its faculty. Some say the UMaine system should be run more like a business and offer only majors that can lead to good jobs. Others argue that the system has already gone too far in that direction and risk the erosion of its reputation. I'm Keith Shortall, and today it's your chance to talk with the decision makers of the UMaine system. First, this news. From the MPBN studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. You may have been following the news on the UMaine system of late, how proposed budget cuts have led to student protests and some faculty outrage, particularly at USM, the second largest of the campuses. The entire University of Maine system, like colleges and universities across the nation, faces difficult budget and financial issues in an environment of increasing competition. With me in the studio today are three leaders of the University of Maine system. They're here to answer your questions about proposed cuts, about the future financial outlook, and how best to serve the students and faculty of the UMaine system. James Page is Chancellor of the University of Maine system. Rebecca Weick is Vice Chancellor for Finance and Administration. And Sam Collins serves as Chair of the UMaine Board of Trustees. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you think should be done about the financial situation at the University of Maine? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. First of all, welcome to all three of you to our program today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the chance to talk about what's been a very volatile conversation over the past few weeks. And we're going to start with the money manager here, Rebecca Weick. Help us understand the problem. There's a $36 million budget hole. How did we get here?
Well, we didn't get here overnight. This has actually been building for probably about 6-7 years and particularly started to come into focus during the recession. The system university-wide is facing a number of challenges. First of all, stagnant state appropriation. We are still about $6 million below where we were in 2008 and have not recovered that ground. Maine families, their median income is down by about $2,000 from where it was back in 2007. And trying to increase tuitions in order to make up for appropriation that is not keeping pace with inflation puts an undue burden on those families. And so the trustees have been very conscious of that, particularly in recent years, and have frozen tuition for the last 2 years and plan to do so for the next year as well. A third factor to create sort of the perfect storm that we're facing is that there is a huge demographic shift happening in Maine. Between the years of 2010 and 2020, we will lose 19.5% of the number of high school annual graduates that come out. And so our traditional student age population is shrinking rather rapidly, and all of those things culminate in less funding available for the university system and fewer students. And we really don't have any choice but to bring down the number of faculty and the number of staff and the infrastructure in order to serve a smaller population.
Chancellor Page, in the wake of all those revenue issues then, I'll play amateur chancellor here and say your options are to increase enrollment by attracting students from out of state. Is that possible to do simply by but if you do that by lowering tuition, then you can't pay your bills. So how do you do that? How do you wrestle with that?
Well, Keith, you're right. There's two ways to meet this challenge, and you have to work a combination of the two. One is to increase revenue, and the other is to decrease expenses. The increasing revenue in a because we have made the decision that we are not going to do that in terms of tuition increases, and that someday when tuition increases will start up again, they have to be manageable. We can't look to them to make up lost revenue from the past because we have an absolute responsibility to keep quality education affordable to average Maine families. So looking at the revenue side, there are opportunities internal to the state and external. One of the – you point out we can bring in students from outside, but our demographic challenges, while a little bit more pronounced in Maine, are not unique to the Northeast. All of the Northeast is losing population from that age range. So we have to have programs and opportunities that stand out in a very differentiated way to bring people in from outside. The other thing we can do, however, is that we have a great opportunity within the state to increase our educational attainment, not just from students of the traditional population age, but of what might be called adult and non-traditional population as well. We've been talking a lot in the last several months about a data set from the Maine Development Foundation that shows that there are well over a couple of 100,000 Maine citizens who had some degree of post-secondary education but did not complete their degree or certification or whatever they set out to do. Not only is that a financial stranded investment, but the stranded cost in terms of human opportunity is enormous. And if we can serve that population and draw them in and get them, help them get to the next stages, everybody wins throughout the state. So there are a number of revenue enhancing ways, if we're going to look at it in those sorts of terms, the opportunities that we have. But there also we have to be realistic. Given the size of the structural gap that we have, we can't just promise, I can't promise the board a revenue increase of X tens of millions of dollars over the next year or two to close this.
So there's a short-term fiscal issue that we have to deal with. I want to follow up a little bit, though, on these on other students. What about international students? We've seen even some high schools in Maine trying to attract international students. Is that something that could be developed down the road?
It could be a piece of the pie, but there's no single silver bullet in this, or even a couple of bronze ones. Several schools are doing very well, and one of the things that the United States has an enviable world advantage in terms of education. We do have the finest education system in the world, and the proof of that is the willingness and readiness of other countries and businesses and families from all over the world to send both their high school students and their college age students and beyond, of course, for graduate training here to this country. We need to take advantage of that, but we also can't assume that that's going to be the long-term solution, in part because these are very smart people. They're getting a great education, and they eventually will go back and re-educate. They'll set up their systems in their home countries. For the time being, however, that is something that we're looking at, and we've been reasonably successful with some overseas recruitment, but we are stepping that up as well.
Becky, one more math question I forgot to ask you about, and that is – while there's this money in and money out, and that has to balance, part of the equation also has to be some level of reserve. You can't just pay all your bills every year and start afresh. How much of a buffer do you feel comfortable with having as a reserve or contingency or surplus, if you want to call it, that you think should be protected against using to pay bills?
So we do have a rainy day fund. It's worth about $15 million. We only started it about 4 years ago, and we have been filling it from temporary investment income that is above what we budgeted. And that doesn't happen every year, but for 3 years in the last four, it did, and we were able to build that. The goal was actually to have it be at least 5% of prior year's revenues. That is a benchmark. It's not the only benchmark. It's actually a rather modest benchmark. But I think we are going to have to dip into that fund significantly in this year. USM is not the only one of our seven institutions that is experiencing hardship. We have six other institutions that in one form or another will be receiving aid from the system this year in order to manage the FY15 budget. Some of the other institutions have their own reserves. USM has a very limited amount, and they have outlined that recently about how they plan to use that. but we will be jumping in to cover a significant portion of USM's shortfall. So even with the cuts that have been announced and how drastic they are and how emotional they are, they barely cover they don't come close to covering the $14 million gap that appears here.
Yeah, you're about halfway to solving that.
I don't think so.
Not even
I think
there.
They're actually maybe less than a quarter of the way there.
Sam Collins, you're chair of the Board of Trustees. And as I know, boards look at the numbers, the fiscal, that's their responsibility. They also look at the bigger questions about mission and how those two things are achieved. But let's talk about the short-term solution here. Are you prepared to say today, we're willing to maybe provide some of the surplus or this extra money to solve the short-term problem in this case?
Certainly the short-term problem is making sure that we have a balanced budget and using some of those reserves to balance the budgets of each of the campuses is important, and we must do that. Going forward, though, we have to have a plan that will ensure sustainability. And that's the biggest concern of all the trustees, is that we can continue to provide an affordable, accessible, quality education. And making it affordable is, for the main families, paramount. And that is one of the reasons that we have chosen to freeze tuition for the past 2 years, and going into 2015 will be the third year, with a caveat that the legislature doesn't reduce any of our funding. But the main families can no longer afford to pay the price of tuition that they have been paying over the course of the several years. The average debt nationally for a student coming out of a four-year institution is over $29,000 at this point in time. So you have to ask, is education still the great equalizer for students coming out of school and having debt that's average $29,000, which means many students are coming out of school with debt exceeding $100,000. So how do you catch up? So that's a great concern to us, and we want to make sure that it's accessible. Yeah, the other point I'd like to make is that the university system and all colleges no longer have a monopoly on delivering education. There are so many modes to receive an education, and so much competition, whether it's Udacity or whether it's the private schools or whether it's across the border, or online courses. So the options are so great. And if you think about it, the Britannica Encyclopedia, that's no longer printed. And where do you get your information today? Wikipedia. And you compare the accuracy of Wikipedia to Britannica, it's within a margin of less than 1%. So the university is very concerned with not only budgeting the balance today, but budgeting the balance into the future and making sure that we're sustainable, that we have an offering for main families that's affordable.
We'll probably hear from some of the callers. Some of the issues are questions that have been raised in this debate, particularly around USM. And so I want to get to those early so that we can also talk about some bigger issues. One is that I'm sure some critics will say, well, why don't you cut more administration versus faculty? And if you could address that.
Sure. And certainly, that's a good question, and it's a question that the trustees look at when they look at the entire budget. And one of the questions that I have asked and that all the trustees have asked is, how do we compare in terms of our administrative costs to other institutions throughout the United States, certainly University of Massachusetts, UNH, and the community college? And our administrative costs are approximately 8% of the budget, which is very much in line and less than our neighbors to the left and in line with our neighbors to the south, and a lot less than some others that we compare it to. So we do keep our eye on that, and I think we can continue to look at trying to whittle that expense down, because we have to be a very flat organization in that respect.
The bigger question, I guess, also in this debate is that some would say, well, the UMaine system, like many public institutions, really should be run more like a business, to the extent that it watches its bottom line and only offers services that pay for themselves and that sort of thing. How would you articulate, I guess, the board's position on this question? Should UMaine subsidize academic programs that it feels are important, even if they are expensive and don't pay for themselves, or should the system lean toward a structure where it's totally based on student demand, on the jobs at the other end, and mm-hmm. that kind of philosophy?
Yep. I think we have to consider everything. Our mission is education, research, and the resultant economic development and public service. So if you look at each of those segments, some of those segments aren't going to be profitable. And certainly there are some academic areas that are very important to this state and very important to the people of Maine that maybe if you look at enrollment alone and you look at that program in itself and you put it on a P&L, it may not be make economic sense. But it's an important program, and so we have to have that program. And the trustees realize and look at it in that respect. However, we have to balance our budget. So we have to have programs that do bring revenue to the bottom line. And we have to look at the different platforms in which we deliver education. So if we can deliver education online, and that can be a profit center, let's say, then we can take some of that revenue and bottom line money and help subsidize some of the academic programs that are very important to students and to the people of the state of Maine. So we're looking at the whole picture and have to, just like a business. In a business, you certainly operate on the basis of making money at the bottom line, but you may have distinct profit centers within that business that some are profitable, some are not. But it all adds to the mission of the entire business.
Chancellor Page, we're talking a lot about specifics and a program here and a program there, and it's important to people, and I'm sure it will come up when we start taking calls. But do you envision a university system that's going to have to change dramatically with the changing marketplace over the next 5 years?
Yes, I do. And I think we have, however, the pieces – most of the piece is ready to really move that forward in a productive way. We've talked about being smaller, but we've also talked about a larger degree of integration, both around administrative functions and academic programs. We have fabulous resources, human resources, on all of our campuses. We need to find a way, and we need to eliminate the bureaucratic barriers and some of the historical and cultural barriers to allow those folks to really collaborate in ways that can share opportunities and resources across the state, no matter where you might be located. And that's a big part of what we need to do going forward.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll go to the phones. Your chance to ask questions of these three leaders of the University of Maine system. The number is 1-800-399-3566 to join this conversation on this program. And we will take your calls in a moment. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, the financial future of the University of Maine system. With me in the studio, James Page, Chancellor of the University of Maine system, Rebecca Weick, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Administration at UMaine, and Sam Collins, who is Chair of the UMaine Board of Trustees. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. And indeed, from email, a listener asks, I've been following the discussions about cuts in the UMaine system with some interest. I was pleased to see buried in the recent newspaper article that the administration was being trimmed by something like $1.1 million. Not having the full set of numbers, is this the same proportion or greater than the cutbacks in faculty and programs? If not, why not? Rebecca Weick, is there a sort of a similar percentage of cuts proposed?
Actually, no. System-wide, we've reduced our workforce by about 10% since 2007. And if you look at administrators, we have reduced them by 26%, whereas the faculty have been reduced by 10% and other salaried and hourly staff by about 8.5%. At USM, the picture is slightly different. But about 30% of administrators were reduced since 2007, 15% of the faculty, and 23% of the salaried and hourly staff. And, of course, not all of those are retrenchments or layoffs. We also tried to work attrition wherever we could.
All right. Let's go to the phones and bring in some of our patient listeners to USM now, and Susan. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Keith. I'm delighted to be on the program, and I want you to know that I'm a strong supporter of MPBN, as are all the faculty I know in the university system, and that's quite a lot. So I would like to know when you're going to have faculty and students on your show so that the rest of the state can hear our version of this alleged fiscal crisis and the anti-liberal arts agenda of the Board of Trustees.
Okay, well, we'll let the representative of the board answer that, Sam Collins.
So the question was, Susan, when you'll be allowed to come on public broadcasting to speak? I guess I didn't quite understand the question.
My question is, since Keith has given you the forum to lay out your case before the people of Maine, then the people of Maine deserve to hear the other sides of this debate, and that would be from the faculty and students, who I might add are as informed as you are.
Yes.
There is no financial crisis.
Sure. Susan, I guess this is a call-in program, and we did reach out to a few of the USM Faculty Senate who were not able to come on, but it's a call-in program, and we took your call first, so now's your chance.
I appreciate that. So please explain to me why, with record reserves, you're claiming that there is a financial crisis. You have enough reserves on hand to run the system for 5 months if you've got not a single penny more in tuition.
Becky White, do you want to take that?
Sure. So those are not the reserves, Susan. Those are the unrestricted net assets, which are as of June 30th of 2013. It's a point in time from our financial statements. And most of those assets are committed to building improvements, IT infrastructure, student scholarships, and the like. The True Rainy Day Fund, as we have continually expressed to the Board of Trustees and to the public, is $15 million at this point in time, and we do intend to dip deeply into those reserves to assist USM in this moment of crisis.
Susan, are you still with us? Susan? Okay, we've lost Susan. I'm not sure what happened. Let's go to Wendy in Brunswick. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I finished my master's in American and New England Studies last year at USM, and it's one of the programs that you all are considering eliminating. This American New England Studies program, it's the only Master's of Arts program in the humanities at USM. So regarding young people leaving Maine, as well as attracting young people to Maine, if you end it, you're turning away future teachers and historians, journalists, artists, humanities people who are looking to advance their education and careers in Maine. That's my comment, and if you have any responses, I can take them off the air.
Okay, Wendy, thank you. We'll let Chancellor Page tackle that.
Well, without getting into the qualities of any of the programs that are up for review, there is a process, and the process is underway. And the process begins with the administration delivering a proposal, an opinion, to the community and a group of the Faculty Senate, or the Faculty Senate is expected to respond, and there's a community dialogue that goes on around the future of program, whether they're eliminations or additions or significant amendments. Those will eventually come to our central office where they're reviewed by the Office of Academic Administration and ultimately by myself and the Board of Trustees. So without going into the specifics, I am well aware that the debate and concern around that program and the others is one where there's a important discussion going on right now, and that discussion needs to play through in the process in which it's going.
It's interesting that unlike a private school, a private college. So, for example, if Bowdoin decided that it was going to drop some course of study or sort of particular program, you wouldn't get a huge public outcry. That would simply be their choice, and if you didn't like it, you would go somewhere else. There's a very different dynamic in a public university system where people are very protective of programs that they think should be included. It's much more of a public process in terms of deciding what the curriculum should be.
It's a public institution, taxpayer funded, with a mission driven responsibility to the people of Maine. So we would all expect that dialogue to go on. Sometimes it's messy. but it's a necessary part of the process.
Let's go to Little Deer Isle and Jeff. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Well, I think that it's commendable that you all are being fiscally responsible, but I fear that this continued defensive posture ultimately is going to weaken the University of Maine system even further. And I would hope that you would also put a great deal of efforts into into fundraising, and particularly to trying to convince the state legislature to budget a larger proportion of funds to the educational system, higher educational system in the state. Are you doing that? Do you have plans to do that?
We're certainly, first of all, one of the important outcomes of this whole process we're going through right now is to focus the public and our political leadership on the question of public higher education and the funding of higher education. We have an education generally and higher education specifically has broad bipartisan support in the legislature. We're very fortunate in that way. People understand the value of education and the way it can affect and move our citizens of the state. And they also have a set of very unenviable choices in Augusta. So this needs to be part of the debate. We are advocating hard for it. We are also mindful of the overall the economy and the challenges that Augusta has economically, and we are part of that, and we're inseparable from that debate, given that education is a significant part of that budget. You will see a concerted effort for us to direct that discussion in a way which really challenges us all in the best sense to make some hard decisions about how public higher education is going to be supported. And is it a collective good or an individual privilege? Those are questions that the privates don't have to answer, but we must address.
Trustee Collins, is there a temptation when you're trying to get the attention of the legislature, which usually responds to squeaky wheels, who then agitate the voter base, who then contact the legislators and are upset with them and motivate them to act? Sometimes to get their attention, do you not have to take drastic action? In other words, is it not the case that the legislature might not listen until you do something bold that stirs the pot and gets a response?
Certainly, legislators are representative of the people of Maine, and they react accordingly to the squeaky wheel, as you put it. You know, I've spoken to some legislators, and they have said if they get 8 to 10, 5 to 10 calls on an issue, that's significant. And it's certainly they'll be reactive to the citizens of the state of Maine as to who they represent. Education in Maine, if you look at the history, at one time, 71.5% of the budget for the University of Maine system was funded by the legislature. Today, it is down to 40%. And I think our caller raises a very good point and as to what are the priorities for the legislators and the state of Maine and the people of the state of Maine. And if education is going to be a high priority, then we need to fund it accordingly. Of course, the challenge today is that there are so many economic challenges and so many, whether it's K through 12 being not adequately funded, or revenue sharing for each of the communities. There's a lot of challenges that the legislature has, and I empathize with that. But for a family to educate their son or daughter today and for them to come out of school with a debt that exceeds on an average nationally greater than $29,000, that's a burden too. And so what burden are we further putting on people, our children in the future? And we have to consider that. And will education still be the great equalizer?
Back to the phones in a moment. There have been criticisms raised or the suggestion that the system may be, in order to save money down the road, kind of ending relationships with tenured professors and turning instead to much less expensive adjunct professors. Rebecca Wyke, is there any trend there? Have you tracked that? What can you tell us about whether that's the case.
I think there is a national trend there, and there also is somewhat of a trend here in Maine. But USM in particular, the provost was working very hard to preserve core full-time tenure or tenure-track faculty in each of the programs. So it was actually using that as compared to the number of students majoring in that particular discipline as a key metric in how those programs were evaluated. And that, to me, says that the administration does have a recognition of what's important. It's just that program by program, the interest level in terms of students who want to major in that discipline is going to vary. And the number of faculty that have tenure or tenure track status by program is also going to vary. And so it does require at this point in time, given where we're at and given the drop in enrollments, we've dropped about 2,000 FTE students in the past 7 years, and half of those are at USM. So really we're in a place where it's just not sustainable with all the other challenges, and it does require some very painful decisions.
Going forward, is there a philosophy about this? I mean, do you want to keep nurturing tenure-track professors?
Yes. And in fact, USM is looking to hire some tenure-track professors in key disciplines where they feel they don't have enough. So really what you're looking for is how, as the popularity of particular academic programs goes up and down, how do you maintain both a core set of full-time faculty that are tenure or tenure track in order to manage the program, and then how do you supplement with an appropriate number of adjunct or full-time faculty that are not tenure track in order to rise and fall as the programs grow and decline in popularity.
And quickly here before the break, do you know what areas those are that USM is looking for tenure track?
I believe there is some in nursing, and I'm gonna
put you on the spot.
Yeah,
there.
You did.
I'm good at that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments, questions for these three leaders of the UMaine system. This is Maine Calling. Stay with us. And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the financial future of the University of Maine system. With me in the studio, James Page. He's chancellor of the UMaine system. Rebecca Weick, vice chancellor for finance and administration at UMaine. And Sam Collins, who chairs the UMaine Board of Trustees. We want you to join the conversation. The number, once again, 800-399-3566. That's 800-399-3566. Let's go to Rachel in Portland. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I am one of the faculty members whose position was retrenched a couple of weeks ago. And I wanted to speak to your guests. Specifically, I wanted to talk about, I believe it was Rebecca White's comment, that one of the metrics that the provost used to decide which faculty members in which departments got retrenched was the number of majors per faculty. One of the things that I've been trying to do for years is to get them to look at the number of student credit hours per faculty member rather than the number of majors. I teach until May 31st, if nothing changes, in the economics program, which doesn't have a lot of majors per faculty on paper, although it has been growing, which was also one of the metrics that the provost said that he looked at. But my classes are full every semester. I teach about an average of 30 to 35 students per class. I bring in about, one of my colleagues ran the numbers, I bring in $90,000 per semester or per year, excuse me, more than my salary and benefits. And the reason that I am able to do that is because I teach a lot of business students in the economics program. And also I personally teach a lot of students in the environmental science and environmental science and policy program. So if you look at it from a student credit hour perspective rather than from a major perspective, the economics department certainly isn't one of the ones that should have been targeted. But I also wanted to say this, is that they're trying to, you know, one of the visions that's being put forward is for a metropolitan university, for USM to be more of a metropolitan university. And I think that there is a lot of support for that. But when you look at where the cuts fell at USM, they seem to almost fall disproportionately on the people. And I'm not trying to say that there was any intent on this, but on the faculty who are most involved in the program. I've been involved in service learning for about 5 years now.
Rachel, can I interrupt you and just explain your take on what Metropolitan University is?
My take on Metropolitan University is the one that's more connected with the community, more students working within the community, more internships perhaps, and that's all very exciting to me. And actually, I'm hoping that I get the chance to be part of that future, and at the moment, it doesn't look like I'm going to be.
Okay, well, let's do those two, respond to those two. The first, I guess Becky Weick was this gauging, the assessing the courses based upon credit hours versus majors per. I forgot what the thing was, but explain.
Certainly. First, I just do want to express my sympathy to the caller. This is very difficult, and it's much more difficult to be on the receiving end of these reductions. I was speaking to the faculty to academic program majors as one metric because we were talking about the tenured faculty, but it is my understanding that student credit hours generated as well as the courses and sections taught were also among the metrics, and there were a number of others. The faculty contract that we have, which was agreed to by both parties, and this particular provision has been in there for many years, does prescribe, once a program has been identified for reductions for financial reasons, how the process occurs, and it is based on seniority. So sadly, we are losing some of our newest faculty and who are very engaged, and I am very sorry to hear about this particular instance.
Rachel also raises this idea that the president of USM talked about recently about becoming a metropolitan university, which involves being more sort of in touch with the community directly with various programs. Chancellor Page, just talk about that and respond to Rachel's concern that the cuts may not reflect the desire to move in that way.
Surely. Again, Rachel, and I'll add my sympathy to Vice Chancellor Weick's to your situation. It's not something that any of us think is ultimately any cut, any situation like this is a lost opportunity, and not just for you as an individual, but of course for our students and our programs throughout. So these changes have to occur as few as possible, and some of the constraints Vice Chancellor Weick has already mentioned. In terms of are these consonant with the idea of a metropolitan university, I think Rachel had the core idea very clearly, which is you build a set of programs and a culture which is intimately tied to the workings of the community in which it's embedded. And the metropolitan area of Greater Portland is one where the University of Southern Maine has had a history of outreach and engagement, and we need to take that and build on it and make it a core part of the overall program and culture. It is likely that you could make a case that almost any program properly focused would play a role under a metropolitan framework. The fact would we be implementing the metropolitan vision differently if we had lots of money as opposed to a significant shortfall? The answer is almost certainly yes. The fact is that we have to balance the budget, and to some degree, those items may occasionally come into conflict with one another. I appreciate her comment that this was not done with intent. It certainly was not. But inevitably, there's going to be tensions arising when you have to make short-term changes, albeit very significant ones, to balance your budget versus how you're going to implement the long-term vision.
Just a few minutes left here in the program. We're going to go to Holden now. And Deb, hi, Deb, real quickly, please, if you can.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to address the astounding amount of redundancy that there is in the UMaine system. Not only, every campus has its president and chancellor and provost and all the administration that goes along with that, but there's also huge redundancy in programs and For example, the engineering program is offered at UFM and 40 minutes away now at Brunswick and at the University in Orono. I know that the program in Brunswick is being funded out of the Orono program, so it's stretching resources there. I'm sure that's not the only example. It's just one that I have information about.
Okay. I'm going to cut you off, Deb, because we're really running out of time. But I'll let Chancellor Page answer this question about redundancy. If you're looking for ways to save money, that's a great place to start.
It's a great question, and one of the directives from the board to my office and through me working through the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs and all of the campuses is to identify those redundancies and see where we can streamline and where we can leverage. The engineering case you mentioned. There is an important story that needs to be told there in terms of the various needs driven by our businesses and by our communities for engineering resources throughout the state. So that there is, in that instance, there's a good story to tell about why the assets are distributed the way they are, and at the same time, getting the various engineering programs together and say, how can we be more efficient? How can we eliminate redundancies? Or where redundancies are necessary, we really identify those and work to that. There is a very active discussion going on amongst the presidents and amongst the chief academic officers on all the campuses to see how we can streamline those. And there's to take one example, the University of Maine in Augusta and the University of Maine at Fort Kent have recently come together to streamline their nursing program. That was just approved by the Board of Trustees. There's going to be significant savings coming out of that.
30 seconds left. What are next steps in this process?
The larger piece is the trustees and I and the leadership of the campuses are working to make sure that the campuses are focused on their individual and differentiating missions, and that taken as a whole, those missions provide the full range of and portfolio of services and programs that we need for both educational to meet all of our research, education, and public service parts.
Board decides though in May, right?
That is correct.
Okay, and that with that we're out of time. Thank you, James, Rebecca, Sam. Thanks for all being here today. James Page, Chancellor of the University of Maine System, Rebecca Wyke, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Administration at UMaine, and Sam Collins, Board of Trustee member. For the UMaine system. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith and Jennifer Rooks. Our volunteer, Lucas Randall Owens, answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcasts, by visiting mpbn.net/MaineCalling. You can also find our podcasts on iTunes. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.